When was the last time you were hungry? I wonder if you can remember, you're always hungry, always hungry. Whenever I used to come home, I'd always go straight to the fridge and check what was in the fridge, if it was home from school or whatever. Look in the fridge, oh, I'm hungry. Look in the cupboards, what's in there? Oh, not a lot. You might knit, oh, there's a... On a good day, you'd have some, like Kit Kat or chocolate hobnobs. On a bad day, there's just some plain digestives or rich tea or something, and you go, oh man, I'll do with it. You go out, you do watch some homework. Can we turn that off? Whatever. You're definitely ruining my things here. Turn it off. Go on, Bennett.
No, that was weird.
I was always hungry. I'd go to the front room, I'd watch some telly or something, pretend to do some homework maybe. And then I'd go back to the fridge, open the door, magically think that something else had been put into the fridge in like the 10 minutes since there was nothing in the fridge. As if, it magically refilled itself. And to be honest, I still do that. I go downstairs and the first thing I do when I go in the kitchen is just have a cheeky look inside the fridge. Anything in the fridge? No, nothing's still in the fridge because neither of us have been shopping and mum isn't there to go and do shopping for us. I wonder if you can remember the last time you were hungry, what it felt like. Do you get any warning signs when you're hungry? Anyone get any warning signs? What happens? How do you know you're hungry?
Yawning.
You're yawning. You yawn when you're hungry. You would, wouldn't you? Right, you yawn when you're hungry and you get rumbles in your tummy when you're tired, do you, Brian? Pete?
I was
going
to say rumble in the tummy.
Sandra? Irritable. You get hangry, do you?
More than usual.
More than usual. More irritable than usual. Is that what you were going to say, Daisy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Claire?
I get lightheaded and can't make my mind up about anything.
Yeah, you do actually. Yeah, you get lightheaded and you kind of get really indecisive. You just need to sit down and eat something. So Anne,
headache,
you get headache. Okay, so you get, sometimes we get physical symptoms of hunger. Sometimes there's sort of emotional symptoms in terms of it affects our mood. What's Elizabeth? She gets the shakes. Wow. Well, it's a good job you've got a good chef sitting next to you as husband who's always ready to whip up something in the kitchen. No, I know that's a lie. So sometimes we get physical responses to tell us you're hungry. Sometimes we get emotional changes, our character, our attitude, our mood is affected by hunger. When Mia gets hungry, she pulls some really funny faces. In the morning, she makes funny noises. She wants milk when she wakes up first thing in the morning. If I go and get her out of a cot and take her out of a little... sleeping bag thing that she wears. I take her in to Claire to be fed and she starts making noises which tell us, yeah, she wants milk. And at that point, the best thing to do is just to give her to Claire because she doesn't want me holding her. And when she wants food, like proper food, like lunchtime or dinner or whatever, she'll sit there and if she's hungry, she's in a high chair and she will lean forward and open her mouth as wide as possible. If I open my mouth as wide as possible, that will mean I'll get more food quickly. And so she does that when she's really hungry. We've got a video in a minute that we are going to see, which you've kind of already seen half of it, when she's hungry and being fed. This is a couple months ago. I think it was just before Christmas we took this. That sometimes when we're hungry... we might eat something that looks good, but actually, it's not so good for us. Or we try something because we think it looks good or we've heard it's good, but we realise it leaves a bad taste in the mouth. So we're going to watch a quick video of Miri modelling that for us.
Not sure if we're a fan of yoghurt. Let's try again. You've got to try it a few times before you like it. Oh, Mia. Oh, dear. This doesn't bode well, does it?
Yes, she's flapping her arms around at the front. Sometimes it doesn't matter how hard we try. We try to fill the gap, the hunger gap, but it doesn't satisfy. It doesn't make us happy. Sometimes we eat things that we think are good, but it turn out to be something different indeed. And yeah, she still don't really like natural yogurt, does she? But hunger isn't just about food. Hunger is about desire as well. About intensely desiring something. When we want something so bad. I wonder what the things are that you intensely desire. Things that you desperately want in your life. What are the things that you desperately want in your life? Now, as you think about those things, has that desire led to a change in your behaviour or your thoughts? Because when we desperately want something, it can change us. Now that could mean we desperately want something that we want to buy, so we save up in order to afford it. We make changes to the kind of things that we're already spending our money on. Maybe we cut back on the number of coffees we've bought out this week, or we cut back on our weekly groceries so we can save money in order to afford the thing that we really want. Maybe it means putting extra hours of study so that we can pass that exam that we've got coming up in order to get that job that we really want. Whatever it is, I think we're all familiar with that feeling of intensely desiring something or someone. When you really want something or someone. Saint Augustine said that there was a simple difference between animals and their desire for stuff and humans for their desire for stuff. And the difference is that human desire is insatiable. It means we're never truly satisfied. Animals are hungry, so they eat. When a lion's hungry, it gets grouchy, and until it makes a kill, eats the food, and then it chills. The lion falls asleep, has a snooze. It's happy. It generally shows signs of being content. When animals are hungry, they eat, and then they're satisfied until that hunger builds up again. But we're hungry for something more than food. Our hunger as humans is for the infinite, for life itself. The things that we really hunger for are things like love, joy, happiness. One of the reasons that we find death so utterly devastating is because we long for life. Death was not meant to be the natural end point in the human story when God first created us. We are made for life. We're made for eternity because we're made in God's image. And in death, we feel the disconnect between us and God more intensely than at any other point. And that's why it can be so painful, because we are made for life. We are made for living. The source of our appetite, of this hunger for life, is God. Because when we long for anything other than God, ultimately we're left hungry. Nothing else satisfies. As humans, we spend so much of our time trying to satisfy ourselves. And we are so creative in what we'll try and where we'll go to explore in order to do that, to meet that need. And that doesn't matter whether it's food, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in work and ploughing ourselves into work, whether it's into making money. There is no end to our creativity in trying to satisfy that hunger that we have. But nothing satisfies other than God. So I ask you this morning, are you hungry for God? Being hungry for God is about desire. It's not so much about if we want to know God, but how much do we want to know God? Or how much do we want to know God more? Because if you ask the question, if I went out on the street and I asked everyone in the town, would you like to know God better? Or would you like a closer relationship with God? I think most people say, yeah, I would. Yeah, definitely. But how much do you want that is a different question. Is it a priority in your life to know God better? Because lots of people say, yeah, I'd like to know God better, but then they don't want to do anything about it. Or maybe you've been at a service, you know, people go, the three services that people that aren't Christians tend to go to and be in church, either a christening, or a wedding, or a funeral. And in any of those three, normally there's a point where someone thinks and reflects a little bit about life itself and about bigger things that maybe we don't really think about the rest of the time. But then that kind of disappears. We don't do anything with it. It moves on and we kind of put that on the back burner. How much do you want to know God better? How does that desire go, burn within you? Is it a priority? Now the difficult question here is that this isn't simply a question for those who don't believe in God or haven't quite made their mind up yet. Because this is a question first and foremost for believers themselves. For those of us who do believe in God and who have put our trust and faith in Jesus as Saviour. Because I encounter so many Christians who don't have or maybe have lost that hunger for God. And sometimes it's to the extent that faith almost becomes a burden that we carry on our backs. Something else that I've got to do. It becomes about a kind of a list of regulations and obligations instead of the source that feeds us, that nurtures us, that satisfies us. Now I think, generally speaking, we sort of know if we're hungry for God or not. But there are some things that we can be aware of, things that we can practice if we want to ignite a newfound hunger for God. Kind of like signs, if you like, that we can look out for within ourselves to tell us, are you hungry for God or not? How hungry are we? So what are they, is the question then. Well, fortunately, they don't require pulling funny faces like Mia or making funny noises, although you do see some strange things in worship at times, which I'm not sure is necessarily things of the Lord. But it's here that I want us to turn to our story from Genesis and Abraham's example. Because in this story between Abraham and Isaac, we have three signs, three examples that we can look for of whether we're hungry for God. And those three things are quite simple. The first one is, are we available? Are we available? The second one is, are we obedient? And the third one is, are we generous? Are we available? Are we obedient? And are we generous? Three signs or measures of our hunger for God. So are we available first up? Well, this is a pretty famous story from Genesis chapter 22. It's a story of God testing Abraham's faith. It's a test of how important is God to Abraham. What does Abraham really desire? Now, if we've been following in the previous chapters, we know that Abraham was desperate for a son. And last week we looked at how he went about things the wrong way in order to try and get a son with the birth of Ishmael. But eventually Isaac is born. It meets Abraham's greatest human desire. And God promises Abraham that through Isaac he would keep his promise to bless all of Abraham's descendants, that his descendants would number the stars in the sky. So not only was Abraham the one thing that Isaac, the one thing that Abraham had desired all his life, he was also the living example of God's provision to Abraham. So you can only imagine his reaction when God says, "Get up, I want you to sacrifice your son." Now, before he even says this, right at the very beginning of this passage, we read that God calls Abraham, and Abraham responds with the words, "Here I am. Here I am. I'm here, Lord." Abraham was ready and available for God when God needed him. He didn't say, "Hang on a sec, God, I've just got to finish feeding the cattle. Can you get back to me in 5? He didn't say, "Can one of my servants just take a message and he'll pass it on to me later?" He didn't say, "God, can you speak to my wife instead? She's much better at these kind of conversations than I am. I'm more of a practical guy, like hands-on. All the emotional stuff, Sarah will deal with that." Abraham was ready and available to God. When we really desire God, when we're hungry for God, we make ourselves available to him. We make space for God, even when we have the busiest of lives. And there's a lot of parallels in this story with Jesus, and we'll look at some of them a little bit in a few minutes. But one thing that we see Jesus doing is making space for God, making space for the Father. Time and again, when you read the Gospels, he withdraws away from the crowds. He makes space to pray, to be quiet, to listen to God, to be available. So when we're hungry for God, we make space for God. We make ourselves available to him. And that might mean being willing to reorganize our time, our priorities, our commitments around God. I'm sure Abraham had stuff to do that week. This wasn't God just saying, "Can you pop down the shops and pick me up some milk?" This wasn't a 5-minute job. This was a big deal, a life-changing deal. And we read that it wasn't just, "Can you pop over there to go and do that in the back garden?" He had to travel. And we see and we read that he traveled for days with Isaac. Abraham was available, was ready. And the second sign of Abraham's hunger for God is in his obedience. And I think this is probably the most powerful and also distressing example of willing obedience in the Old Testament. It's an uncomfortable passage, or at least it starts off that way. When we look more closely, we see that Abraham didn't waste time. He didn't try and delay or haggle or negotiate with God. "Are you sure about this? Actually, I'm not sure I heard God clearly on that one. I think I'm going to fast for 40 days and see if he says something different." He didn't try and be over spiritual. He heard God, he knew God had said something, and so he acted in obedience. He gets up the following morning. He collects the firewood, takes responsibility and gets on with stuff. What Abraham is doing is he's acting in faith. He trusts that God will provide. His job is simply to be obedient to what God has said. We see some clues in the verses as the story goes on. But Abraham believes that God will protect Isaac's life as he has a conversation with his son. Abraham believes that God will be faithful, because he knows that God has already made promises about Isaac and Isaac's life. Why would he go back on his promise? Abraham's faith is based on the fact that God will be faithful. He believes it, and so he's obedient to God's command. That doesn't mean he should try and second guess God. It doesn't mean that he wasn't willing to do what God had said, even if he didn't understand it. If we want to be closer to God, to know God better, to enjoy that satisfying, intimate, life-giving relationship with the Creator, then start by being obedient. It's not a fashionable word. Yet obedience to God brings freedom. It's a really funny kind of thing, because we think obedience means kind of being subservient to someone, to kind of being restricted. But actually, obedience to God brings freedom, because it means that we're no longer slaves to the world, to materialism, to greed, to one-upmanship. We're free to be ourselves, to flourish, to find satisfaction in life. That's what obedience to God brings. It brings freedom. So often it's been warped that obedience means, well, here's this massive list of do's and don'ts, mainly don'ts. And the don'ts mean all the good stuff that you actually like doing. We make out as if obedience to God means being chained up. But actually the truth is obedience to God brings freedom. If you want to hunger for God, start with obedience. Start with being available to God. Finally, we see that Abraham is generous. He's willing to give Isaac to God. He recognises that his children aren't his property. And that is hard to learn when you've got children or grandchildren. They're not our property. We don't own them. We have a responsibility for them, but we don't own them. Being generous to God is a sign of our hunger for God. Now, I want to kind of be clear here, because I think it's quite open to... when you start talking about generosity in this sort of way, it can be misinterpreted. So let me try and be clear. We're not generous to God because we want something back from God. That's a transaction. There's no difference to that kind of attitude as if you go into the supermarket to buy a pint of milk. I want that milk, and I'm going to be generous in giving you the however much money that requires in order to obtain it. Giving to God comes from a sense that when we want to be close to Him, when we want to love God more, generosity is a natural kind of response to it. If you think of, if you love someone, a husband or wife or whoever, when you love someone, you kind of just want to naturally be generous to them. Mia, when she had a dedication, got a money box. And I found myself putting all my pounds and £2 that I have lying around in this money box. No doubt in order to then use it to buy something for myself later on when she's not looking. But no, I wouldn't do that really. I find myself being generous. It's not. I'm not putting one and two peas in. I'm sure, you know, that would help, that would grow. But when on the rare occasion that I actually use cash and not cards, and I get some change, and I come home at the end of the day and there's some money in my pocket, I'm putting it in because I want to be generous to her, because I love her. When we love someone, generosity is a natural response. So the more we love God, the more generous we are with God, with the things that we give to God and are willing to give to God. The things that we are willing to give up for God or hand over to God. And really the test for that one is actually asking the opposite question. What won't you give to God? What things are ring-fenced away from God? No, you can have that, but not that. There's a quick test for you. Gauging your hunger for God. Abraham is saying that he's not only willing to give up his son, but he's also willing to give up the blessing that God had promised through Isaac. He's willing to give that up in order to be obedient, in order to remain close to God. I think that's a massive challenge. It challenges me hugely. When I was reading it, I was challenged by what I was reading. So as we seek to answer this question of whether we're hungry for God, we can ask ourselves, are we available? Are we obedient? Are we generous? And let me just finish with just the incredible thing about these three questions and about this story of Abraham and Isaac is that God is all of these things and more. God isn't asking of us what God is already willing to do himself. God answers these three questions of being available, being obedient, being generous, far better than we ever will. We see it through Jesus, because Jesus firstly is available. He shows a willingness to leave the riches of heaven and come down to earth as this vulnerable, helpless baby. And he does this out of a love for humanity and a desire to heal our brokenness. God makes himself available to us. And Jesus is obedient. In Philippians 2, verse 8, it says of Jesus that he humbled himself and became obedient even to the point of death, even death on a cross. There's no greater act of obedience in all of Scripture, in all of history, as Jesus, as he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's about to be arrested. He knows there is impending torture, agony, pain, and death itself. And he's overcome by this prospect. And he cries out to God the Father as he prays, "Yet not my will, but yours, that I might be obedient to the Father." And that leads on to the generosity of God. Jesus is generous in the giving of his life. Where Abraham was spared by the provision of the ram, he didn't have to give his son up. God doesn't spare himself. Jesus is not spared. Jesus is the sacrificial lamb, dying in order to give back life to a broken, disobedient humanity. Jesus goes through all of this so that we might find our deepest desires satisfied in God. That we might know God for ourselves and stop looking and searching everywhere else for it. For that hunger to be met. Do you hunger for God? How deep does that hunger go? Make yourself available to him. Be obedient to God. And be generous to God. Hunger after him, I urge you, and you will find your desires satisfied. Amen.